Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And after a cracking weekend of Premiership rugby, French top 14 rugby, no URC this week. Oh, yeah, there was URC rugby. And ahead of a massive European Champions Cup and Challenge Cup weekend, there is lots to talk about. And there's plenty going on off the field as well. So lots to cover. We're here for you every single Monday morning, 52 weeks of the year. Except for two Monday mornings, when occasionally we may put a podcast out on a Tuesday because of because JB's devout Christian.
That's right, exactly right. Hello, Tim. How are you?
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you. By the way, great news. He has risen.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
We're talking about Marcus Smith and Quinns, right?
Yeah, of course. Who else? I'm assuming in America they have... I know
Easter?
We have quite a lot of...
They're Christian.
They have Easter, but is Easter Monday off work? Because they hardly give them any time off work. I imagine Americans are probably working today.
Got no idea.
I know. Anyway. Got no idea. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But we're here. I'm Tim. That is JB. We are in the rugby dungeon currently, waiting for Phil, who is down the line, to log in from a secure location. He's taken the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container to a secret location. I'll let him reveal that in a little bit. Yeah. How are you doing, JB?
I'm good. I'm good. I enjoyed the weekend's rugby. I don't think there was any local rugby. It certainly wasn't for Toc H. Was there any for Broughton Park?
No, I think it's a down weekend, isn't it, at local level. There's the odd... I think basically below the championship, there's pretty much nothing. Maybe the odd game. But
no, I didn't register anything in the Northwest.
But some absolutely cracking stuff in the Premiership. What's the news of the last week? What's been going on?
So the big news this week would be the Premiership financial results. Which I think I'll wait for Phil to show up to talk.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll
be chatting with those tomorrow morning, first thing with Mark Evans in Eggonomics, so yeah. You can listen to that. But that was quite interesting. As expected, everyone's taken an absolutely enormous loss.
Yeah, like you say, I don't know a lot about that. I'll wait for Phil to talk about that. Also, another bit of news is the whole professional getting his... directly linked to the finances of the sport in England, the professional game partnership agreement, PGP, as it's known, mm-hmm. is taking a step closer to being sorted, with Simon Halliday, who is the representative of the championship clubs. He's negotiating on their behalf. He said that things are getting closer. The gap is narrowing between what the premiership clubs and the Premiership Rugby were, and the RFU were saying they wanted to do, and what the Championship clubs were willing to accept.
Oh, interesting.
So I think part of that, for example, I've seen is that these arbitrary stadium sizes are being knocked down. They have been knocked down to enter. You have to have a minimum of 5,000, and it was but you had to have a plan in place to get to the 10,000, which was the barrier. But I think that it's going to be dropped to 7,500, which, given the attendance of Premiership clubs, that seems a little bit more realistic.
Maybe. I mean, did you see the attendances this weekend? They look pretty decent.
Did they?
I think so. I mean, it depends how you cut this up. Some teams are perennially low attended, but when you look at some other teams, it only needs a few wins. Bath always look at the moment, always look bouncing. Bristol, Gloucester, they kind of Northampton, Leicester. You know, they all seem to be in a good place at the moment. And in my mind, the structure of the league with only 10 teams means that everyone has a chance. And actually, everyone does have a chance. Look at Bristol. They might actually make the... I mean, if Bristol make the top four, I'll be heartbroken.
You've always rated Pat Lam, haven't you?
He's
as a man
great
motivator.
Coach. Great coach.
Are you keeping an eye on Phil when he's joining the thing? I'll leave that to you. If that's right. I'll delegate that to you. I suppose another big bit of news before we get into the specifics of any individual game. Lewis Rees-Sammet has been signed by the Kansas City Chiefs.
Has he been signed? Like, actually really signed?
He's actually been signed.
Yeah, but hang on. Where are we now? We are in March. And not to...
April now.
Sorry, of course, yes, April 1st.
We haven't even had the draft yet. The draft is next month. No, it's later this month. It's in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, so...
Might be in early
It's a
next
long
month.
Way to go, yeah. Because they'll have all of the practice squads and they'll be cutting down their final cuts. I mean, he's about as far away to making the Chiefs as you can possibly be.
Do you think?
Yeah, I do. Well, unless...
Well, so here's the thing. So you're absolutely right to point out, currently, in any NFL franchise, there will be about 100 athletes. And they're all competing for, initially, well, first and foremost, those 53 roster spots. And then there's a practice squad of backups, which they can have up to 16. Now, the international, one thing they've added to the international player pathway, which is interesting for Lewis Rees-Sammet, is that not only do sides get an additional spot on their practice squad if they take on an international pathway player like Lewis Rees-Sammet, so they can have 17, not 16. But in addition to that, Lewis Rees-Sammet could be used on a match day, suit up and go out on a Sunday, three times without having to count on the 53-man roster.
That's huge. Yeah, that is huge. That makes a massive difference.
Yeah. So they don't have to cut anyone in order to give
Harry
him a go.
Harry Malander? That's the story we all care about.
Nothing yet. Nothing yet. But on Lewis Rees-Sammet, he's been signed, and what they said is he's a running back / wide receiver.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, the other thing that's very relevant to his chances in the NFL, and I totally agree with you, if he suits up and goes out on a Sunday at any point, it is the most incredible story. But his chances have been massively increased because the NFL have changed the rules on kickoffs. Because, weirdly, at a time when rugby union is toying with the idea of having marks being able to be called from kickoffs inside the 22, the NFL are doing the exact opposite because they don't want any dead time. So what's happening is, as you mentioned on last week's podcast, in the NFL, all this excitement, the crowd going bananas, waving towels above their head, and then the guy calls a fair catch, the American football equivalent of a mark, and the game stops, they go to an ad break. Well, now what they do is the defenders have to stay on the 35-metre line.
Okay. Defenders have to stay on
the
35-metre
line. They have to stand on the 35-metre line until the defending player catches the ball. And you cannot call a fair catch. You have to return the kick.
So you think he's going to be a kick returner?
I think he could be a kick returner.
Interesting. There's a long, long way to go yet. And I'm still not convinced, but I hope he makes it. And so far, so good. Good for him.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's really cool. Is Phil knocking around yet? I've seen him. We've got a WhatsApp message. Is that from him?
I don't know. I've not got a WhatsApp message. Who's WhatsApping you at this time? Why are you looking at your phone?
Oh, it's you saying, text me when you're logging in. Yeah. That's you messaging Phil. Okay. Right, well, you talked about the Premiership. In terms of the actual rugby, as always, get in touch. Contact headchasers@gmail.com with any questions, any thoughts, any reactions, anything. You can get in touch with JB on LinkedIn.
Or Beardmore & Co, independent financial advisors, pensions, investments.
And you can find me giving you extra rugby content through the week. Just as JB mentioned, you're going to get another third Eggonomics episode with JB and Mark Evans in the feed this midweek. But for more rugby content, you can go to Egg Chasers Rugby on YouTube as well.
Of course you can. I'll be doing. What have you been doing this week, Tim?
What do you mean, what have I been doing?
As in, what videos have you put up?
One on Lewis Rees-Sammet.
Of course.
Actually, it's a really good question. What have I put up?
How do you know? Is it because you produce so much content, you kind of forget?
Well, yeah, and you should go to Egg Chasers Rugby.
And of course, I know because I've watched them all, but I'm just asking it's a test for you.
I was looking at some breakout stars for 2024.
Who are your breakout stars for 2024? Are you allowed to say, or do I need to click and get those delicious views?
Go and click and get those delicious views. On that video, there's a great deal for NordVPN I can introduce you to as well.
Is there? So, like, you don't get caught buying gifts for your wife.
Exactly that.
Oh, that's so useful.
So I would put one name, Tavita Tatafu.
Who's that?
He's a tight head prop that qualifies for France this year.
Of course he does.
And he plays for Bayonne, and he's 150.
Of course he does.
He's 150 kilos.
I think I've heard of this guy. Did you talk about him last week?
There's two, yes, I may have done, or one time recently, but there's two Tavita Tatafus. There's one who already plays for a different French
team. There are
team.
Two Tavita Tatafis.
There's two Tavita Tatafis. One, okay. One is a back row player that already plays for Tonga, I think it is.
Yeah.
And there's one who is Tongan by birth, same name, tight head prop, plays for Bayonne, qualifies for France very soon.
Oh, how interesting.
He will be Awini Antonio's
I'm sure I've seen this kid.
Successor. You can't miss him. He's absolutely enormous. But anyway, if you want to find out the other big stars that I've tipped for big things in 2024, Ted Hill. I'll say another one. I mentioned Ted Hill.
Well, I mean, I agree with you.
He just seems like
what's the criteria? Is it like a big star? Is it like guy? Or?
No, it's not. It doesn't have to be a young guy. It's someone that I said could. My tips for potential people that have they may have a breakout moment in 2024.
Ready to step onto the international stage.
Exactly that.
I think you're absolutely right on Ted Hill. I think he's an absolute monster.
Phil says he's waiting to get in. Let him in.
He says he's on his way in now. Let's have a look.
And Phil is here. As if by magic.
Good evening, gentlemen. How's it going?
By the look of it, in a YMCA dormitory. Where are you? What's going on?
Well, I am in kind of my usual Easter haunt, which is Bedgellert in North Wales, in a very, very nice, how would I describe this? Little cottage, right in the centre of Bedgellert, a stone's throw from the ice cream parlour and the pizzeria.
You mentioning it before. But Bedgellert, also a good Welsh women's international player, I think. Right,
isn't she the tight head prop that beat her partner, but then got away with it because you can do that kind of thing in women's rugby?
Not allowed to talk about that, JB.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's fine. I'm pretty sure if you do that in women's rugby, you let off scot free and you come straight back into the game.
Oh yeah, that's right. She was let off scot free and came straight back into play.
Yeah,
but that would have
that's
happened.
Okay though, isn't
it? If it was a man doing the same thing, JB, the same
it's
rules would apply.
Absolutely fine. I can't wait to see Bedgellert play again. Welcome back, Beth.
So a weekend of are the kids, have you managed to get the kids into long walks?
50-50 in that regard. So we did about a 10k walk today, of which the eldest, Thomas, did the entirety of it with
good
no
lad.
Complaining.
Good lad.
Powered on. And Hannah walked maybe 1 meter in 50. She walked, which meant I did 10K almost entirely with her on my shoulders.
Brilliant.
Including about 300 metres of elevation with 20 kg at kind of head height, which is very good training, actually.
That's like a military workout right there.
Once I have a holiday, which I don't enjoy, I never do it again. So I went skiing, hated it, didn't go again. You put yourself through this every single... I mean, I'm sure you'll say you've got to toe the family line and say that you love it. But every single year, maybe I'm projecting here because I hate mountains. Because I went to a school where they made us go on the mountains every Wednesday, and I absolutely loathe the Welsh mountains. I'm from Wales. I can think of nothing worse than going into Snowdonia. Nothing worse. And even worse than that is it's a big CrossFit thing. I don't know why, but CrossFit people love hiking. And they always ask me, do you want to go on a hike? And I'm absolutely not. Never in a million years.
Well, I'm currently sat, I don't know, 30 miles from where you grew up, JB.
Okay.
It's not that far. But I genuinely love it. I really like it here.
I love coastal walks. I love coastal paths and cliffs, but no time for the mountains.
And so today we had a great walk with the kids. It was hammering it down all morning, but beautiful all afternoon. Lovely walk. Did 10, 12K. Mostly with 20 kg on my shoulders, and then got home. They had some food, and I went off to go and do just a very gentle jog and 100 chin-ups at the local playground.
Very nice,
fair play.
Which is what I kind of enjoy.
Fair play.
It's gorgeous here,
mate. We've already covered off most of the rugby news of the week: Lewis Rees-Sammet signing for the Chiefs and various other bits and bobs. But one thing JB just mentioned, which we were waiting to talk to you about, because you'll have a good view on this, is the financial report that's come from the Premiership and its clubs and the combined significant losses between them. Have you seen this?
I've kind of seen it drip feeding through. A lot of them have come out in the last week, and almost everyone is losing significant sums, some more than others. Saracens losing another £5 million, which, well, it's wholly unsustainable, no matter what way you look at it, unless you've got someone who just likes burning 5 million pounds per year, which not too many people do. So I've seen that. I also saw the Premiership Rugby statement on Leicester Tigers earlier today.
I haven't seen that.
Now, I ignored that because I wasn't sure on my newsfeed if it's an April Fool's joke.
So there was a formal Premiership Rugby media release.
It's an odd day to have done that, isn't it?
Yeah.
A bank holiday Monday, that is also April Fool's Day.
Now, it did come through at 4 p.m. today, so it's outside the April Fool's window, and it's not really a laughing matter.
What is it? I haven't even seen it.
So, reading the statement right now, Premiership Rugby can confirm that additional payments of £47,136.91 have been identified relating to the salary cap spend of Leicester Tigers in the 2019-2020, so 4 years ago, salary cap year. This is, so as announced in March 22, there was an overspend by Leicester Tigers of £98,586.32 in that same season. So this puts them nearly 150K into breach in a single season, which is nowhere near the Saracen levels. But it does mean that they have to pay a fine of an extra £1 per pound that they're spending because of the window. So not, it's in the scheme of things, it's relatively small, but it's another misdemeanor in the same period that we thought was already covered off by a previously announced misdemeanor.
Yeah, strange for it to have come out so long after they supposedly resolved the financial misdemeanors of that particular year. But hey.
Which makes it look not good and makes it look like there was at least some something underhand or someone trying to cover things up. But it's still, to me, it's still within the kind of realms of, that period does cover the COVID period. And there was a massive amount of uncertainty and of paying players off. Those who were unwilling to take the salary reduction that was trying to enforce on them, so I take it as it's playing out the consequences of COVID, the salary reductions, and people not accepting them, and it's just come to light now. So I don't think it is kind of Saracens-esque in. It's either scale or the kind of, I don't want to use the word intent because that was never really proven or had to be proven against Saracens, but the scale of the misdemeanors.
That's an interesting one to watch. In terms of the actual losses, JB, and you've looked into more of this as well, Phil, you've looked into it more than I have at this point, but are there any clubs that are kind of pointing the way and going, they're kind of the best of a not great bunch?
Well, the answer is, with just the raw numbers, you don't really know. So, for example, I think Gloucester had the lowest loss. I think it was like a couple of hundred thousand, might even be less than that. But then it's like, well, okay, you've got the lowest loss, but is that potential for a profit next year? You know, are they spending their money wisely? Are they up to the cap with their players? Like, what is it that they're actually doing?
I suppose you could also say they're also ninth.
Yeah, they're also ninth. So, you know, maybe they're spending money, but not particularly wisely. And then there's Exeter, who have made a loss of about 3 million, but 2 million of that is linked to the hotel. Now, if you listen to Exeter off the record, they think next year they will break even. But they've had to have Tony Rowe buy part of the hotel back at least. So it's just, I think these figures just point to the uncertainty of previous years, because there's no way after last year and losing 3 rugby clubs, you're going to get a set of financial results and go, oh, it's great. I mean, you're just not going to get that. I don't think that the fans were particularly keen. Even we were not particularly keen. If you look at last year, was it even really a competition? It wasn't a competition as we know it. I mean, you've got 2 clubs, you've got unfulfilled fixtures. To me, it's no surprise. In fact, the biggest surprise is that the losses weren't greater. That's what I would say.
There was one other standout. I'm just looking for the numbers here. I can't find it right now. But there was one other standout thing that was just how far behind Sale are in terms of their overall revenue.
Yeah,
because they don't. Yeah, they don't own their own ground, which is something that they shared with London Irish, who obviously no longer exist. And the fact that that means that kind of 90% of their revenue has to go on salaries.
Yeah.
So an enormous proportion, and the majority of their salaries are going to players.
Yeah.
So they're overstretched as a consequence.
They've got lowest budget and lowest turnover.
Yeah.
Which is, it's crazy. And also, they're a lot leaner this year. I don't think anyone mind me saying that, but they are a lot leaner this year than they have been in previous years in terms of their organisation, which kind of makes sense. I mean, if you listen to what certain people say in Sale Sharks, you know, the best thing that they can do to survive is hope that the owners do incredibly well financially, because you know that's the best thing for them. I think it's very hard to make rugby very hard to make rugby profitable for Sale, given the hand that they've been dealt. They do need a stadium, but God, the amount that, I mean, you build stadiums, Phil, the amount that you'd need to spend on actually buying a stadium or building one would be astronomical now. We can't get things built at the best of times.
Yeah, they kind of have to, but it's an enormous gamble. It's a gamble of the same level as the Wasps gamble, which obviously didn't pay off. Now that was made worse because of the COVID period and they failed to get any revenue. When you buy a stadium that is profitable in its own right due to hotel, entertainment, gym,
yeah,
and you're unable to do those things, then it's not going to be profitable.
Car park.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's really, really, really difficult. The biggest difference between Sale Sharks, Wasps and Worcester is the quality of the ownership. By a country mile. So if they did decide to do it, I imagine they would see it all the way through. But very difficult.
It does. It takes kind of Sale. they have to do it, but to do it is like a 20, 30 year commitment, because you're talking at the probably most basic level, assuming you can get a decent chunk of land somewhere between
awesome bit of land. where was it? Do you remember that bit of land that they had? Crossford Bridge. It looked perfect, just off the M60. Ideal for redevelopment into a stadium. But unfortunately, some NIMBYs ruined it, like they ruined the rest of our rest of our country.
Fantastic location. It's kind of like, what did the Trump Russian collusion get called? That got called something like Watergate for morons. Sale trying to build a stadium on something that had four independent planning restrictions.
And Phil living around the corner.
Including it's on a floodplain.
The biggest restriction, Phil.
I said 50 to 100 million, you might as well double or triple that if they wanted to build in that plot of land. So
I tell you what,
don't blame me for just inquiring about whether they were serious about that investment.
If Ray told you to build that stadium, you bloody build that stadium.
Oh, 100%, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just going to say, doubling back on with all these losses, there was another step forward apparently in getting this PGP thing sorted out with the Championship clubs getting on board. But when I look at this, I understand why the Premiership are trying to not only completely ring fence themselves, but also absorb about 90% of all of all of the RFU's money in their own entity, because they are getting hammered. I don't think it's the right way to go, but I understand why their motivations are such that they want themselves sorted at the exclusion of pretty much anything else.
Well, I do think that they provide basically everything to English rugby. This is the other thing which people forget. The handful of owners that we've got bankrolling these teams are also bankrolling England rugby. They just are. You know, these players...
Well, only because England rugby have the current rules in place that they currently do.
Well, I mean, they could get rid of those rules and the players could disappear to France. You know, so that could happen. But
I don't think it would happen in nearly the numbers that a lot of people fear it would.
Well, let's find out. I mean, I'm with you. We should just find out. Let the boys play and make as much money as possible. Definitely. And if they're not careful, you know, Tim, they're going to end up in a situation like the Super League. So the Super League now, they don't even see the NRL as competition. They see the NRL as a godsend, because when one of their players goes to the NRL, he becomes a superstar. Everyone talks about the NRL players. They don't talk about the St. Helens players or the Warrington players. They talk about the NRL player who is tearing up for the Roosters or wherever he is. And they become stars in their own right when they come back to England. And that's what will happen with the Premiership. Because if you get a Zach Mercer who is tearing up in Montpellier, or, you know, how often do we talk about, oh my God, Sam Simmons is doing great? Or, you know,
Jack Willis is doing brilliantly.
Jack Willis is doing great. Zach Henry has got more coverage playing for Stade Francais than he ever got for Leicester Tigers. You know, so that's kind of the direction of travel. So they've got to be careful. But back to my point, it is the Premiership, in fairness to them, that produce all of the players. Maybe not the raw materials, maybe not the kids that end up in the Premiership, but what those kids become is all down to the Premiership.
Well, I'm happy for them to be funded well and get their slice of the pie that they deserve for the role that they do. I would take the academies off them completely, have them run independently.
No, have them scrapped.
You can you can invest that money far, far better and produce probably more players as a consequence. Mm-hmm. Flood the school system with money, the university system with money. That might be my approach. Anyway, there's a load of things there, but just...
Here's a controversial view for you, Tim.
Go on.
If you really wanted to grow rugby, maybe you scrap all of the academies and use the academy money to provide bursaries for poor kids to go to posh schools. I mean, it's a horribly, horribly elitist view, but it's horribly untrendy, but I tell you what, it would work.
It would... Yeah, I was going to say, it depends. It's not the way to achieve... It wouldn't be the way you would want the outcome to be achieved, but it actually would achieve the outcome.
If you're only optimising for good rugby players, I mean, you would have to face facts that you're going to be subsidising the education of the richest, most privileged kids in the, probably on the planet.
Yeah.
But that's how you produce the best rugby players.
Yeah.
Okay. There is another problem for the Premiership that we've spoken about previously on this podcast. And it's one that could have been horrific in the last 12 months, 18 months, were it not for the kind of blessing in disguise of three clubs going bump. And that's what we've already spoken about today, the kind of loss of players to France, which has been bad for the last few years. But when you spread 13 clubs with talent, even losing some across 10 clubs.
About 120 players suddenly available. That's 12 per club if you want them.
It's fine for that one season. It means that the overall talent in the Premiership, the concentration of talent in the Premiership, despite losing some very talented players, is still comparable. But you are going to be in a position where basically the most, because of the GIF rule in France, they will only take the kind of either the best, the absolute best, or someone who's really good value for money. And so you are going to start losing the best players. And we're seeing this season alone, we're seeing a massive number of very talented players go out to France.
Yeah, so
like Faz, like Ludlam, like Laws, like Manu, like Sinclair.
Yeah.
But in fairness, they are... I mean, it's not as bad as Australia, where they lose their guys in like their mid-20s. I mean, they are very, very big names in rugby. They're huge names. In my mind, it's probably about time for them to go, though. That's what I think. There are a few guys who've got a bit more to offer. I mean, obviously, Courtney Laws could play tomorrow, but he's not the future.
No, I get that. Yeah. Jack Willis would be the best example.
Yeah, Jack Willis is great.
Who decided to stay on after he had that dispensation to go to the World Cup and all the rest of it, but he decided to stay on afterwards, and he's looked at the situation and gone, actually, he'd rather play in France.
100%. And he gets looked after bloody well.
Yeah.
Like, really, really well. I think it was it last year in the Six Nations? He was the only guy who played Six Nations for England who was rested the week after.
He will also be the only guy who played for England in the Six Nations who plays in front of packed grounds every single week.
Yeah, you say that, but look at the Premiership.
That's not disparaging the Premiership. It's more like France is what Imagine playing in packed stadiums like that with those crowds every week.
I have to admit, it's a different beast, isn't it?
It's just a different beast. But that said, let's look at the Premiership at the minute, because on the flip side, the storylines and the The run-in, I know it goes on a couple of week break now because of the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup, but we're in a situation where second to eighth all have 8 wins, 6 defeats and are separated by only the bonus points they've managed to get or not get through the season. That's pretty remarkable. I cannot remember another season in the Premiership that like this.
I can't even work out. I mean, it's hard to work out what's going on because you would expect with all these new players going to all these different clubs and the talent level rising, but you'd expect the talent level to rise, but the coherency of the teams to fall. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's what I'd expect. So with that, you'd also expect that defence would be the name of the game and you'd see some very low scoring games because the easiest thing to do with a bunch of new lads is teach them defence defence and set piece. What we're actually seeing is just blistering attacking rugby, points absolutely everywhere, even from teams which should be pack dominant, territory dominant. Even they are scoring. The points total in the Premiership this weekend was absolutely astronomical.
Three teams scoring 40 points, and even three teams that lost, two teams that lost getting in the 30s.
Yeah, that's. I mean, you just tell a team before they play, you're going to score 30 something points today. Will you take that? Yeah, okay, we will. And you still lose. So I don't really understand what's going on unless the coherent teams who have been together for a longer time are really taking advantage of disorganised. I don't know. The answer is I don't know.
Well, I don't know either. I don't know if you've got a perspective, Phil. I know you were limited how much rugby you could actually watch, but you can just see the games and the way they played out. What's bizarre is Harlequins get absolutely smashed, obliterated by Saracens last week. And 7 days later, Harlequins, I mean, I know the scoreline looked close, but 40 points to 3, Harlequins were up against Bath at half-time. And Saracens were getting a beat down until some late scores made the scoreline look more respectable. So they were getting a beat down by Saints. So, like, is it just home advantage, away advantage? That's the one common thread there. Is suddenly playing at home worth about 40 points in the Premiership?
40 points, maybe, yeah.
You also add to that Saints, who got absolutely marmalised by Bristol last weekend. Bristol put 50 points on Saints last weekend, while Saracens were putting 50 points on Harlequins, and Bath put 40 points on Sale last week, and this weekend, Northampton have destroyed Saracens, Quinns destroyed Bath, and Bristol. I guess the only kind of common theme: Bristol won, although they made hard work of it against Gloucester. It's hard to know. Truth be told,
and Exeter didn't just lose this weekend; they got absolutely battered.
Well, do you watch this game?
I didn't watch. I didn't watch the whole game, but I caught as much of it as I could. And I think the best indicator of what was going on was Rob Baxter, who's really honest and open, and he just looked like he was dejected.
I am so shocked at this result. I am so shocked. So I'm shocked for two reasons. I watched the game and I thought first half, I'm thinking, yes, Sale are up by four tries. Robock scored one. Trying to think.
Cowan Dickey and Gus War.
Yeah. Yes, the Gus War one. Yes. Okay. I'm thinking, okay, fine. But I don't think Sale have been substantially better than Exeter. And it was still my opinion that the team is going to score the most points is going to be the one that had a prolonged period with the ball, because they kept on dropping it. Neither team were particularly good first half. And it just didn't materialise. Sale took their chances when they got into the Exeter third very, very well. There was one particular try where Robert cut through and it looked absolutely magnificent. And I just thought, I didn't think Exeter were bad at all in the first half. And then the second thing I thought is, okay, well, you're down by 3 points, but 3 points, three scores or three tries, sorry. But if there was a coach in the league I would want to be talking to these lads at half-time and changing one or two things, it would be Rob Baxter. And I thought, there's no way Rob Baxter's going to come out and not score a bunch of points with this team that he's got. Because it's a good team as well. I really like the makeup of this Exeter team. And they did the sum total of nothing. I was absolutely astonished.
Yeah, it was a very disappointing performance for them. And going into Champions Cup, it's not great. Just like when you were talking about, and this is more general, not about specific games, So I'm aware that Phil hasn't watched all the rugby. So just on this general point, I watched the first two episodes of Chasing the Sun, the South African World Cup 2023 documentary.
Mm-hmm.
I did that by taking advantage of the great offer you get on NordVPN if you go to.
Oh, yeah.
The Egg Chasers rugby video. No. but anyway, because it's only broadcast in South Africa, but I have managed to watch it.
Yeah, I was going to watch it the other day with a pint of Athletic Greens, but I didn't get around to doing it.
So that's the one thing I got from Rassie Erasmus and Jack Nienaber as well as a coaching pair, specifically Rassie Erasmus, is that... No, you can all be motivated to like play for your mates or whatever, or to play to beat the opposition or for a goal that you're working towards. But it's so powerful and palpable what comes through with that South Africa thing is how much they get them to play for something much, much bigger. Like, I know it sounds really corny, and I can see JV's face already starting to sigh.
Oh, right.
He's not into it, yeah. But because you hear about this a lot, and this used to be how it was in the amateur days, playing for your country meant you were, you're playing for your country. Money sort of muddies that a little bit, but it honestly felt like, oh my God, that group of men were like, they were actually playing 100% for their country.
So a friend of mine watches United, he watches them every week, and he goes with a guy who's a sports psychologist, and he's a sports psychologist. He's done some work for international teams, and we were talking about this today, like how... it's very easy for footballers to switch off and how money doesn't motivate them. Because I cannot understand for the life of me how footballers don't try hard. You know, like, you have... what was the example I gave? Like, Ronaldo, a couple of years ago, walking around the field. Like, why would you walk around the field?
Or the other way of looking at it is if I had a guaranteed five-year contract on 150 grand a week, like, it's the footballers that are in that situation that get really pissed off and they want to leave because they're not playing. I'd be like... Fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
Just sit back and...
I'm fine. I'm good, thanks.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, you're making a point about this psychologist.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was now.
Oh, sorry, you said you were chatting to a mate.
Yeah, you've completely thrown me off.
Oh, mate, because I was talking about the motivation, the reason you play.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. So, yeah, they were talking about just trying to motivate them for that reason, like how you, focus the squad, the difference between the 5% being mental and whatnot. The only thing I find with it is like, there seems to be acceptable things that you're allowed to be motivated by. So like, I'd be very motivated by, you know, my ego and arrogance and being the best. But I don't think that's acceptable within sports circles. But I think that's an absolutely fine thing to do if it means that you work hard and win. But it has to be something naff, doesn't it? Like the love of your country or writing your mum's name on a shirt or like this.
Well, no, but if what you're saying wasn't acceptable, then people wouldn't do the whole pinning up newspaper articles or quotes that other people have said on
that's
the board.
That's a good point, actually. I mean, one of those... maybe Saracens are like this, aren't they? Because Saracens are always like, we're the worst team ever. England do it.
Yeah.
We're the worst team ever, apparently. We're the worst team ever. Yeah, so maybe they do it. Maybe it is acceptable.
But there's also the flip side of that, which is the... this is to your point, JB. It's commonplace for... mega athletes, literally the best athletes of their generation, to use phrases like, oh, I'm so humbled to be announced as the best athlete of my generation, when they mean what the direct opposite.
Yeah, I'm not humble at all. Like,
it's an enormous boost to my ego to be announced as the best athlete of my generation.
The one which I love. I'm sorry if I mentioned this before, but yeah, I just feel blessed. I feel blessed to be in this position. What, because God loves you more? Is that what you're saying? Like, it's not humble at all. In fact, it's the ultimate brag. You've been picked by a deity to be better than everyone else. Thanks, mate.
So yeah, the language is against that. But actually, if you dig beneath the language, it's just all about ego.
Yeah, it has to be. Yeah, I'd rather that. I'd rather they just be honest. Like, why are we doing this? Because we want to be the best. Why do we want to be the best? Because it feels good. It feels really, really good.
It feels really good to work hard for something and then achieve the thing that you've been working bloody hard for. Yeah. That feels amazing.
It does feel amazing. Like,
don't lie about it.
What do Saracens do? Because they're obviously the best in the business at this. Now, I know, obviously, Sanderson has come from Saracens, and I can talk about him in a little bit more in a second. But it does seem to me that's kind of what they do. Like, we're going to be a bunch of boys together. We're going to go on the beers, get absolutely leathered. But then they have this other layer, which I hate, is, oh, we've got love for each other. We're going to treat each other really well. It's like, oh, grow up. It's so... Well,
I think the function of the beers and doing all that stuff together, though, is that you will have a group of people that know a lot about each other. Because when you go out for those beers, you'll get into conversations and you'll find out about... someone's background playing rugby, or you'll find out about the relationship between someone and their sister, some difficulty that they're going through, and those are the bonds that tie you together. When you get into the bottom of why you're motivated and who you're motivated for, that is absolutely massive. Like, I do it with my son's team, so they're like inner city Manchester, and we play on that, but also we play getting to the Lancashire Cup final and playing the teams that we play. They play against all of the clubs who have players from the schools that get picked for the representative teams that they get overlooked for, and they perceive they get overlooked for it because they don't go to the right schools. So all I have to say is the semi-final of the Lancashire Cup, Fylde are there. Oh, you know, lads, all I had to say to the boys was, look how many Kirkham Grammar tracksuit tops there are there, boys. And that's it. You can see their eyes just go, right, I'm having you.
Like the rage music from Kill Bill.
Exactly that.
Why don't you get a team sheet from the Lancashire, whatever age group it is, from 3 years ago, read it in the changing rooms, and you say, Jack Smith, Kirkham. Like, would you like to change up, boys? I would do that every single week. Yeah. This is what happened 5 years ago. Are you going to let it happen this year?
Yeah.
Ooh, it's exciting.
Yeah, it's good. So the why and who and what you fight for is... I quite like all that stuff. I love it.
Yeah. What was I going to say? I actually have not the opposite view, but I look at it the other way around from the way you said, which is you learn about individuals. I think when you learn about the individuals and you respect the individuals, is the actual act of playing the game. So I had this conversation with one of the school mums. She goes, this is not just like a bit like, you know, everyone's the same. I was like, no, I hang around with people. I mean, Didsbury is very much the same. Broughton Park is a little bit different. Well, actually, no, that's not fair. All teams are different. But the reason you respect the guy initially is because he's willing to do really hard things next to you on the field. Mm. And then you find out about him on the beers afterwards. So, you know, if they're not willing to do the hard things on the pitch next to you, the chances are you don't really want to go for a beer with them anyway. So it's the act of playing rugby. And then it doesn't really matter what their background is.
I hear that. I suppose it's probably maybe as you get better and better, but it'll be the margins. I can imagine, Phil, those tough pre-seasons are the reason why when you're absolutely hanging out your ass for Sedgley Park, you'd be next to a guy that's gone through that.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With you, and you'll sort of, I don't know, you'll kind of be motivating each other. And the other element is, which I'm curious to know from you, is how much was the fact that you played mini rugby at Sedgley Park, like, in your mind when you were in tough situations playing for the first team in the Championship?
So the second half of that is hard to know because you've never got the counterfactual. But I think I was always more motivated just to be good, as in, it's more of that, like, ego side. And I'm not an egomaniac.
Oh, come on, Phil. You do such a good job on the podcast at hiding it.
He's so blessed. Isn't he blessed?
But it's wanting to be good. It's like the motivator is wanting to be good, which is why, like, tonight when I didn't have to, I went and did a little run on 100 chin-ups. That's not That doesn't make me better at rugby. That's just to go and just do what I do. Just be me.
So what's the saying? It's about doing things when nobody's watching. And I have to have everybody watching to do the thing. So, you know, it's just the way that I'm built. I don't do the thing on my own. Phil does.
I do it, but then I brag about it on the podcast.
Absolutely. So. Then you tell 30,000 people.
It doesn't really. It's not quite as shameless. Yeah.
So were you picking up elements of this on Chasing the Sun?
And you were just talking about Rob Baxter and how he'd be the perfect guy that will. And you'll see a totally different Exeter performance in the Champions Cup next weekend. But it just suddenly popped into my head. I was watching Chasing the Sun, and Razzie Erasmus is absolutely amazing at pushing buttons. And in the first two episodes, he's just like, "I'm going to push that button. I'm going to push that button." And you just see these.
You see these
giant men just suddenly go, "Right, I'm having it."
I suspect in the very short term, in a much more visceral and maybe counterproductive way, Eddie Jones does the same.
Yeah.
I am sure he does. But to the point that he takes it too far. Sure of it. But anyway, back to Exeter.
Yeah.
I do love the look of this team. Did you notice number 12 for Exeter? I
thought Rig.
Yes, he's a big slice. He might even be...
Good name for a rugby player as well.
Yeah. He might even be bigger than Hendrickson.
The diminutive Hendrickson. But yeah. But is he bigger than Ian Whitten? That's the big question.
Oh, he's easily bigger than Ian Whitten. Manu had a reasonable game for a change. He didn't look too bad.
Bayon's Manu Tuilagi.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll get some value there. I mean, I doubt it, but maybe. Yeah, I like Exeter, even though they lost by a huge margin. I think you're right. You will see a different version. I love this pack. It's only a matter of time until this pack starts clicking again.
That back row's cool. Exeter have got so many number eights, but they had three of them in that back row: Fisalau, Capstick, and Vincent.
Yeah, they're going to be okay. They're going to be absolutely fine. And Pearson. Pearson's another player which I really like.
I say they're playing the Champions Cup. They are at home. It will be a big occasion, but they're against Bath.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Are they? Oh, that's a good game. I fancy Exeter. Or do I?
So just quickly on the round of 16, it is Friday night, Harlequins play Glasgow.
Yep.
And then on Saturday, lots of rematches here in games. You've got lunchtime kickoff, the Bulls in Pretoria playing against Lyon.
Fine, okay.
Stormers in Cape Town playing against La Rochelle. That happened in the pool stage, as did a bunch of these fixtures. Exeter Bath. Is it the same time as Stormers La Rochelle? Oh, that's a tough one.
I'm watching Exeter Bath.
I think I'll probably watch Stormers La Rochelle in that one.
I wonder if they'll fill the stadium at Exeter.
I hope so. With Bath fans travelling, sure.
Oh, that's going to be delicious.
Yeah, that is good. Early evening kickoff, Bordeaux Saracens.
Yep. My boys.
Beloved Bordeaux for Phil. And then the late kickoff on Saturday, Leinster Leicester,
another rematch. Don't think that's going to go well for Leicester, who actually really struggled this weekend.
And just quickly on Sunday, Northampton v Munster, another rematch. And also a lot of history historically on that one. That's Sunday lunchtime. And then the last game of the weekend, a game that we saw, a fixture that we saw only a couple of months back, Toulouse Racing.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Toulouse will smash them. Absolutely obliterate them, I think. Is DuPont back yet?
I'm assuming he's back for a bit.
Is he?
Yeah, he played last weekend, I think.
I thought he did.
To see if he played this weekend. But I was kind of expecting him to be locked away in some kind of laboratory, sevens-based laboratory, basically from the end of January. But he's not. He's done a bit of sevens. He's done a bit of 15s for Toulouse, so he's backwards and forwards for that.
And he came back, by the way, and he looked instantly amazing at sevens, and he looked ridiculous when he came back.
Do you
last
think
week.
The plan was to lock him in a laboratory, and they got hold of him and go, "Oh, yeah, he's pretty good, he can go now"?
Yeah, there's nothing more we can do. He's already perfect.
Sorry, boss, it's just it works. We're fine. Off you go.
Well, so DuPont, so Toulouse played Pau.
Great game, that.
They won 31-29. DuPont started at 10.
Yeah.
With Untermak coming off the bench.
Oh, lovely.
So Untermak, who's back after a long layoff within the
Yeah, he
injury.
Got a great reception when he came back on.
He's such a cool player. Yeah. He's such a fine player. God, to lose are going to be good.
JB, honestly, I think the team for you, just the crowd, are insane at Perpignan.
And they are still at Perpignan. Interesting.
But I was thinking this when I was looking at the crowd. Their crowd is unbelievable. It is probably looks like the best atmosphere in France.
They like to get relegated frequently. They're big fans of relegation.
Big fans of relegation, so they bounce up and down. But my beloved Bayonne lost their first home game all season, although it wasn't actually at home. It was in it was up the road in San Sebastian. So it doesn't really count. As they've lost every single game away from home,
including their home game away from home.
Yes, yeah. And they've won all the games at their stadium in Bayonne. They are the Frenchiest of French teams, and I love it.
Do you know the team that I really want to see play? Really want to see play.
Go on,
Seville.
Mm. Oh wow, yeah.
I really want to watch Seville play. We met some of their boys out in Malaga, and they are sizable units. We're like. All got reasonable rugby CVs. Like, they're not great rugby CVs, yeah. But they're all like ex-academy lads. And they walked into the bar and you looked at me, they look like a professional rugby team. And lo and behold, they're a professional rugby team. Well, professional, is that too strong, Phil? They were very good.
They're definitely getting paid a little bit, but I don't think they were paid full-time.
Yes, agreed. Anyway, I would love to watch them because I want a weekend away in Seville.
So... Love it. I am conscious that Phil hasn't watched the Premiership rugby, so we could cover off the other bits and bobs outside of the actual matches, and then you and I could just jabber on about that for a bit. Would that work? Or do you think there's anything from the games that Phil would
I don't know. I mean,
be interested in?
I think there's plenty of stuff, to be honest, but it's up to Phil. Phil?
I've caught up with most of it, so I've watched all of the highlights, I think.
In that case, what about the Quinn's Bath? There was lots to talk about. For one thing, it was like Quinn's were out of sight, and they almost. It was kind of like the reverse of Quinn's v Bristol in the Premiership semi-final all those years ago. Ridiculous comeback, and it looked like Bath were going to do it, and then Bath could kind of have reason for a grievance with how the TMO can't time 10 minutes on a clock. Like
that's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I look, there's two ways to look at this. Yes, it's an absolute disgrace, yada, yada, yada. But on the other hand, we've had thousands, tens of thousands maybe, yellow cards. Maybe not tens of thousands, but thousands of yellow cards, certainly. And it's never happened before. So if it's happened once, fine. And, you know, Bath, I think they have handled it well. Like, it happened, move on.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't beat 15 men, shut up.
Yeah.
You know.
and also, Bath can't complain. You were 40 points to 3 down at halftime.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So there are other reasons.
If anything, Bath have got no complaints, and Quinn should probably feel quite fortunate that they had such a shocking second half. Yeah. Albeit Bath suddenly decided to turn up and play.
If what's his name, Ernie Hubert or Ernst
Herb?
Herbst. Can't even say that.
Ernie Herbst.
That's the one. If he was a 16th man, they might have a point, but he wasn't. He was only coming back on. So I'm not that bothered. It does show the quality of Bath, though. And it also shows that when you've got two teams in the Premiership who can attack as well as Harlequins and Bath, you just can't switch off.
Well, those bonus points are massive as well. Having said already that 8 wins, Northampton are away on their own with 10 wins, and then you've got Gloucester and Newcastle down the bottom, but every other team has got 8 wins. So bonus points are massive, and Bath picked up 2 of them.
Yeah. I mean, it was a gamble by Bath. No, it wasn't a gamble as such. They put themselves in a terrible situation. They do have... the advantage of having a very strong bench. So being able to bring on a Barbary, for instance, was pretty good. Particularly as Kurt Sear seemed to get absolutely annihilated on the gain line every time he touched the ball. It's basically a lesson in Premiership rugby. Like as soon as you try and defend a lead, you're pretty much screwed. Mm. You've got to keep playing and keep scoring. I mean, the wild thing about this is, Harlequins even scored... after the half. It's not like it all belonged to
They scored Harlequin. The first try of the second half, yeah. So, yeah, because the half-time was 33-3, and then they scored.
And they scored, it's like, well, this is over. This is definitely over now.
Yeah.
And with that in my mind, that's why I thought put a fiver on Exeter. But completely wrong. Go on, Phil.
So my two thoughts on this game. One, the Ernie Herbst thing. I completely agree that Bath can't complain about it. If you concede 40 points in 45 yeah, minutes, then you can never complain about anything.
Yes, exactly right.
But the bit that is a bit disappointing is we for a very long time have been very pro Premiership rugby referees, and I still think they're the best in the business. But the last 2 weeks, we've seen two issues. We've seen this and the TMO willfully turning a blind eye to the late hit on Owen Farrell because they didn't want it to look like Austin Healey was steering the ship. And neither of those, it's just not a great look for British rugby to have two back-to-back incidents.
As we're whinging about refs, there was a small issue, I thought, with Hamish. Is it Hamish Smale? Have I made that name up?
Yeah, Hamish Smales.
Yeah. He gave a penalty to Manu Tuilagi for what I see as a blatant yellow card offence, which is deliberate knock-on, slapping it towards the floor. Later on, Josh Hodge leaps into the attacking line of Sale, gets two hands to the ball, knocks it up, right? And to me, it looks like about he just didn't catch it. It's not he knocked it on. He didn't catch it. There's a big difference between those two things. He's got two hands to it, and they're not in front of him. They're literally above his head, and he just doesn't catch it. Yellow card. I was like, this is wrong. Like, Hamish Smale, how he can get that? Because he's not a bad referee. Well, he can't be a bad referee. He refs in the Premiership. But that inconsistency is the sort of thing which drives people insane, because that one's it's not like a ruck infringement. It's not a really technical thing. It's an obvious and clear
and
infringement.
I'm not a massive fan. I don't like the current interpretation of deliberate knock-on as it is. I think there are lots of occasions where a player legitimately goes with the intention to try and catch a ball and they are given yellow cards and penalised already. But that was even more so one you should be lenient with.
Yeah, one hand knocking onto the floor, it's a yellow card.
Well, slapping it down like a volleyball.
Yeah, yellow card. No one cares. Although, who was the guy who slapped it down? Everyone's like, yellow card, and it was a clear yellow card in my mind. Except for he slapped it backwards. But it's like, it's directly down.
That was Eben Etzebeth.
Was it? Directly down. It's like, yes, yellow card.
Did that not happen in the World Cup?
I can't remember. It was quite a famous one. And I watched it three or four times. Like, yellow card. Why is it not?
I think it was in the World Cup final.
What was it?
I think it was in the World Cup final against New Zealand. It was a try. So people were saying there was a deliberate knock on in the.
Maybe.
I think he might have tapped it back. Or maybe it was Rugby Championship. I can't remember.
But
I think it was Eben Etzebeth.
But yeah, that is maybe when the slap down does it. Because he reaches into the line and slaps it down. I was like, he's got to go. That is awful. But no, it went backwards. So maybe it is worth the risk. But even when it goes backwards, I think, I don't know.
So the other point I wanted to make on this game was, and maybe this is an explanation for some of the odd results we've seen over the past 2 weeks, is it has felt a little bit like clubs have got one eye on Europe. And of the last 2 weeks, kind of the post Six Nations games, they've targeted one or the other. Like Northampton targeted this week, Saracens targeted last week, Quinns targeted this week until they were 40 points up, and then they were then all focused about not getting injured to mean that they are targeted next week after that point. With the exception of Bristol, who've won both games, who are currently on the best run of form in the Premiership, they've won four or five on the bounce, and they don't have anything to target next week because they are out of the European Challenge Cup, never mind the Champions Cup. So maybe there's an explanation for the odd or inconsistent results simply because they've got to focus on Europe.
Tell you what.
Or most teams do.
Bristol's run of form is worrying. It is worryingly good. by the way, someone emailed in today to say that I hate South West teams. That's not true. I like Bath.
Contact@gmail.com. Yeah. JB's first beloved team was Bath.
I like Bath.
And then Exeter.
I love Exeter. I love Gloucester. I actually used to support Bristol back in the day. I moved to university to... No, I went to university in Bristol just so I could watch Premiership rugby back in the day. So that isn't true. I just have...
It's specifically Pat Lamb he dislikes, although Pat Lamb is actually doing pretty... He's probably used the Six Nations period better than anyone.
Do you think that he reads out... passages from Egg Chasers to his team? in the same way that you do to your under-16s.
Or maybe Steve Lansdowne reads out quotes from you to Pat Lamb to get him fired up to go and coach the team.
This is what the media are saying. The media. And I do love the fact that Bristol Bears have taken a chance on James Williams, a guy that I absolutely love. I think he's a great player.
Do you know what I think it is with Bristol? Just watching them, I think there is total freedom in the way they're playing, which mentality-wise, they don't have the personnel they had when Pat Lamb was first in charge and had Randranda and Piatow and stuff. But they're playing with that same freedom. It feels like they've got no fear. They're like, maybe because they were in a situation where they kind of had to win. It was like, guys, just have a crack. Just do it. And it's working for them.
Well, the guy who I think has made a difference, and I was very critical of this.
AJ
McGinty. I mean, I'm a bit critical because I was gutted to see him leave Sale. But I know what a classy operator he is for Sale. I just was a little bit sceptical that Bristol had probably gone through all of their due diligence and checked all of the fly halves available for the amount of money that they were paying him. But since he's come back, he's been absolutely magnificent. Like, he's been really, really good.
Randall's been great as well. As the half-back pairs, they've been awesome.
And you don't need much more, do you, than a really good half-back pairing to win? Well, you do need a bit more, but it goes a long way when your half-back pairing is good. They've also got a bloody combative back row. You know, Fitz Harding, Mark, Bradbury and Luatua. They're pretty tasty.
Yeah, that's quite handy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. So it doesn't surprise me that.
Genge, Ogre, Sinclair's a pretty handy front row as well.
Yeah, to be fair. Yeah, they're cooking with gas at the moment. So, who have they got next, I wonder, in the Premiership? Let's not worry about that.
Got a couple of weeks off.
I think they might have Newcastle next.
Yeah,
actually,
they do.
Oh, they do,
They do. A much improved Newcastle, although they still lost at home. Bonkers enter that game.
Was it 100 minutes?
20 minutes of free rugby.
Yeah.
Newcastle, it's interesting looking at their fixtures. When you look at how finely balanced the Premiership is, Bristol having Newcastle at home is a big one. And then Newcastle, I think they play Bath and... Bristol away, Sale at home, Bath at home, Gloucester away. So Bath, Sale and Bristol. If Newcastle keep getting better, one of them could get upset there. But that game, Newcastle Leicester on Friday night was nuts.
I'm not going to lie, I didn't watch it because, of course, there was Saracens Northampton to deal with. So I just thought, why would anyone watch Newcastle? Full stop.
Well,
and I guess they nearly did something.
Well, let me just talk you through. So on 80 minutes, Charlie Clare gets a yellow card. Leicester are 6 points up. Leicester have scored the last try. Ollie Hassell-Collins put them ahead, having trailed. Newcastle were ahead the whole game until Ollie Hassell-Collins scored and Andre Pollard put the conversion over as well. So they had a 6-point advantage. 80 minutes, Charlie Clare gets yellow carded. 84 minutes, Freddie Stewart gets yellow carded.
Oh, God.
89 minutes, James Whitcomb gets yellow carded.
I had no idea about this.
Yeah. And they had time for, I think they had time for all three of them to make it back on the field
before
the game was over.
Word.
Yeah. Nuts, isn't it?
Isn't it? Isn't it just? Christ. And Newcastle still lost. So what does that tell you about Newcastle?
I can't remember the exact decision, but I remember watching the final play of this, just the highlights, and thinking Newcastle are a little bit hard done by there. I think it was a turnover for Leicester,
just
outside their 22, and I couldn't tell you exactly what I thought was wrong, but I thought Leicester got lucky. Newcastle were hard done by with that final decision.
Yeah, I can't remember. Did it involve? Oh no. Brantingham was off by that point.
It was definitely hands in the ruck.
Yeah, that's right.
It was as in Newcastle attacking, tackle made. One of the Leicester players goes to jackal over the ball, and I seem to recall that maybe they didn't adhere to every single law around the ruck. The Leicester players didn't, but they got away with it.
And that's the most important point.
Well, most important point is Newcastle lose again. Steve Diamond loses again.
Yeah.
So,
oh dear.
A good run of form for Gloucester has come to an end. In January, before during the Six Nations, they beat Sale. No, hold on a minute. That can't be right. Premiership Rugby in January. Was there rugby during the Six Nations? Premiership Rugby?
Nope.
No.
Not in
Did they beat them in the Premier in the Premiership Cup, maybe?
Oh, my word. Have we got an example of the app that I use being as bad as Ultimate Rugby?
Not possible.
That's not
Gloucester not 32, happen. Sale 20, Premiership Rugby, January the 28th.
Yeah, because it'll be Premiership Rugby Cup, won't it? It's Premiership Rugby.
No, that was Premiership Rugby.
Oh, was it?
That was regular season, the last weekend of January.
Oh, yeah.
There was regular Premiership Rugby.
That's right, that was before the Six Nations kicks in, because it's first week in February. Right, fine. So immediately before... Good, sorry. Immediately before the Six Nations, Gloucester got a win, having comfortably dispatched Castra in the Challenge Cup, who they play this weekend in the last round of 16. They then won the Premiership Rugby Cup, beating Exeter and Leicester, following it up with a Premiership Rugby victory last week against Leicester away, and you're thinking, it's all happening, and then Gloucester lose at home, very disappointingly. So their momentum is ended, and like you say, Bristol are in the mix now.
They are. There's no denying it. They just are. So, yeah.
Of all the teams, you think Northampton are the closest to being nailed on to being in the top four. No one's nailed on, of course. But
as for Northampton, I mean, I think the most significant game of the weekend was Northampton Saracens.
Yeah.
Because a true clash of two teams that are expecting to do something. Saracens are slowly deteriorating, but they're holding on. I think that's the best way to describe them. They are holding on. Saints are just getting better and better. And you know they're good because every time they need someone to step up, or they don't have players available, someone else steps up. So they had, who was the young lad who was playing really well on the wing not so long ago?
Slighthome.
No. Ginger fella.
Oh, right. Hendy?
Hendy, yeah. George Hendy, isn't it?
Yeah.
He was doing very, very well, gets injured. The next guy's up. And right now, we are in the era of Ollie Slighthome, who looks absolutely unstoppable.
He looks incredible. He looks like... So, Slighthome has always been rapid.
Mm.
But we're kind of well aware, or it's been well publicised, the Northampton bulking session that they had over the summer. And he's always been in kind of decent nick, but a bit lithe. And he looks like he's put on good mass, maintained his speed, his balanced running, his change of direction is superb. He's looking ace at the moment.
Yeah, he's not a big bloke, is he? He's like, I say not a big bloke. He's wide. He looks like a hooker.
He's in good shape. He's in good nick, but he's not massive. He's not particularly tall, but he's rapid.
And the strength of the boy. So the try he scored last week was reminiscent. It's better, actually. It was better than the try Lawrence Delario scored off the back of a scrum against Wales. But it was that kind of, just people hanging off him and just going for it. And this week, he was just... He's sensational at the moment. He's absolutely sensational. Now, I don't think he's sensational enough to be spoke about in, you know, for the England team, because I think it's a form thing. I don't think he's a top-end player. He's not, for instance, Tommy Freeman. But he's doing bloody well. And if he continues, maybe we'll have to change that conversation. But, he's great. He's amazing to watch at the moment.
Just, again, looking at one individual unit in a team, Courtney Laws, Tom Pearson, Juano Augustus.
Some with power there, isn't there?
Lewis Ludlam and Sam Graham on the bench.
Yep.
Those are your back row options. That's flipping handy, that.
Yeah, I hope this is Northampton's year. I really do. Be good. Well, good send off some of the...
Next year is Gloucester's year. This year could be Northampton's year.
Yeah, I think it is, you know. As this team grows in confidence and they get all of their players fit and healthy, they're going to be one hell of a prospect. And they can almost scrimmage. Curtis Langdon's been excellent. Did you see Curtis Langdon hunting down Elliot Daly?
Elliot Daly,
yeah. Yeah, that was good.
Elliot Daly kicks through, you think, yeah. In he goes, Curtis Langdon hunting him down. I don't know if you notice, I'm a massive Curtis Langdon fan.
I have
huge,
heard this.
And huge Curtis Langdon fan.
I think he's ace.
He is ace.
I think he's great. You just reminded me of something because I mentioned...
When you finish this, do you want to talk to me and Phil about something World Rugby have come up with?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, certainly. But we got an email from friend of the pod and excellent columnist for the Times, Matt Cotton.
Oh, hi, Matt.
His column every week is always very lighthearted, very jovial, and very good. Full of good. And I'm sure he'll be doing another one previewing the European fixtures this week. The subject of the email to contact Ed Chase is. @gmail.com is not my wife, blah, LTBE. And he's just sent a screenshot of Ultimate Rugby on Twitter, with the, and he's just said, no words required, and it says, half time, this is on Ultimate Rugby, half time, Saints 10, Saracens 12. The score at half time, actually, so he said it was Saints 10, Saracens 12. The score at half time at Franklin's Gardens was Saints 17, Saracens 10.
Brilliant. So, brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More well done, Ultimate Rugby.
More inside baseball journalism news. Joe's going to be potentially the chairman of the Rugby Writers Association.
You?
Rugby Writers Club.
Nick Mullins?
Nope.
Chairman?
Yeah, as in like in charge, I guess. Do you know who it currently is?
Is it, it's Rob...
it's not Rob Kitson.
Rob Kitson, no? That would be a good one.
Stephen Jones.
Nope. It's currently friend of the pod, Chris Jones.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know who might take it over next?
Ugo? He does everything else.
No, thank God.
No, I'm not saying that guy. No, he doesn't actually write, does he? He broadcasts, but he just, because he's Ugo's like everywhere. He's everywhere.
Everywhere.
Why not?
Everywhere.
Why not be chairman of the Rugby Writers as well?
Johnny Morgan.
Oh, excellent. Great shout.
Fantastic.
I might actually I might go to dinner if he's chairman, or the lunch, or whatever they have.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you'd have to get invited first.
I'll get invited. I can get invited anywhere.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about me. So,
so there was one thing that's been flagged up to me. There was another rugby luminary was very vexed about something, and that's how it's come to my attention. And it's also appropriate given that there's Women's Six Nations on currently.
Mm-hmm.
Squidge Rugby was very, very vexed.
Okay, fair enough. Probably sincerely held beliefs.
About World Rugby, and I don't know where this came from, but he's very upset about this. But World Rugby have some advice to assist coaches
mm-hmm.
in how they can communicate most effectively and take into consideration the communication style they may employ and what may drive particular players based on whether they are male or female, or women, boys or girls.
Interesting. Interesting.
So, for example, highlighting areas of difference. And, of course, this is based on academic research. And
by the way, the worst type of research, but please continue.
Yeah.
the least useful type of research. Yeah.
But also, I think if I could summarise the issue that Squidge Rugby has, it's that he seems to have an issue understanding averages and rather than saying this applies to every individual.
Mm.
So the data says, and World Rugby highlight, that on average, for example, a base reaction in an area of difference between the base reaction of men versus women is men tend to have a base reaction of action, women have a base reaction of feelings.
This is 100% true. This is 100% true.
On average. Not every woman will have that feeling.
Not every man will.
But on average, that's what the data says.
Yeah.
Squid Rugby seemed very, very upset that this has been highlighted and that any difference between men and women has been analysed. That's just one.
What else the World Rugby saying? Because I think this is actually really positive stuff.
Mental preferences. Men are, on average, hardwired to systemise. So to come up with solutions,
correct,
all the rest of it, and women are hardwired to empathize.
I about to say that, yeah, okay, yeah.
So I'll say one, you say what you think the other one would be.
Go
then.
Go on.
Innate interest, men and women. Men's innate interest.
Things.
Correct.
And women. People.
Correct.
Too easy.
You got it. Also the survival strategy.
Ooh, go on.
Men's would be through self-interest, hierarchy, power, and competition.
Women would be teamwork.
This sort of ties into what we were talking about earlier with like Razzie Erasmus, Eddie Jones, people.
Women would be teamwork or operational
relationships, empathy, and connections.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds about right.
Yeah, so the fact that this has been highlighted as something that could potentially be of use to coaches and people involved in dealing with men and women, understanding this generic academic data to maybe enhance how you communicate with people.
Look, it is essential, right? I don't care how angry people are. I do think he's probably got... Yeah, you know, look, it'll be a sincerely held belief. But what it actually tells me is he doesn't communicate with many women. And that's not criticism. He just doesn't, right? And to be fair, neither did I, particularly like in a sporting environment. So I've always coached men, right? I've always played rugby with men. I've done a bit of women's coaching, but hardly any, right? Hardly any, not real any interaction. And the way I deal with men, I don't know. I just know innately what to say, what to do, how... Yeah, because I've been in that situation for ages. You know which buttons to push, how far you can push people, how harsh you can be with lads. You just know. Doing CrossFit, right, and training with women athletes in CrossFit has taught me so much about just how the difference in motivators between the two sexes. Like, you can't... Sometimes you can use exactly the same strategies that you use with men. Like, you know, if you don't lift... It could be... I'm trying to think of an example now. Like, when I'm lifting with a friend of mine who is male, or certain friends, to make them lift, I'll tell them that they're pathetic, right? And you can't get away with that. Like, with women, it just doesn't work. And, like, he knows that I'm joking. I know I'm joking. It's all, but you try that sort of stuff. Like, just pick up the bar. Why are you so weak? And it just doesn't work. And sometimes you can, but you've got to actually listen. You've got to listen, and you've got to motivate them completely differently. So I think this leads into some very interesting conversations about... why it's so hard for women to coach men's teams in the Premiership or professionally, and why it's probably better for women to coach women's teams, because it's a really complex area. Now, in that situation, because you're only dealing with one individual, the coach, you can get the extreme example of a woman that thinks like a man or a man that thinks like a woman, and it does work. In fact, on that note, I know a coach who coaches a male team now who's come from a women's team. And he's crossed over really well. And dealing with him, I kind of think that he would do... Yeah, you can see that he's come from a women's team because he listens a lot. You know, he takes account into what you say. He doesn't coach like I coach. Mm-hmm. And it massively matters. How can it not matter? If you're interested in women's rugby and women's sport, you need to understand how to communicate to women. It's not difficult.
On average. And can I just circle back a bit and go, the intention of this wasn't to say... It was brought to my attention, and I was given the context of how it came to my attention. And actually, Squid Rugby has brought this to the attention of a lot of people because he highlighted it on Twitter. That's how I didn't even know World Rugby had done this. So this is not about me going, oh, this is ridiculous that he said that. I would disagree with any upset about this. And for one thing, I don't know, but I don't think he's a dad yet. But Phil and JB, you've got two girls. You understand men, and you've got two daughters. I have a daughter, Phil, and a son. Phil, you have a son and a daughter. And all of the stereotypes, all of the averages, all of that stuff. I'm right in saying, Phil, I can summarise it by saying it's absolutely true.
It is true. It is true. It's just true.
generally, yes.
Generally.
What I would say is it's a good job I'm not a certain type of parent, because having a younger daughter... who enormously looks up to her older brother and idolises her older brother. She has said many times that she would like to be a boy. She wants short hair.
Oh, no.
If I was a different type of parent, I might have enforced some permanent changes to my three-year-old
well,
daughter.
Well, I mean, if you don't, it's challenging, isn't it?
Yeah, aren't you listening to your daughter, Phil? Yeah. Come on.
What's wrong with you, animal?
Right.
By the way, who would you even say that she's your daughter? Has she decided that she's your daughter?
She decided.
Come on, mate.
I'm putting the prison of a typical Western gender stereotype onto her.
I'm just thinking. I went for a training session, just an open gym. Did it with a friend of mine. And we were lifting, and we were doing cleans. So I'd do a clean, she'd do a clean. And the intention of the session was to work on our mobility, do our cleans, and at the end, just a little bit of a game, we would do like the percentage game. I don't know if you ever played that, but if you and I are lifting, what's your one rep max, my one rep max, and we've got 5 minutes to get as close percentage wise to our one rep max as we possibly can, right? And she wasn't feeling it, and I can't remember what I said, but it's something like, that's pathetic, lift the bar. And she did not lift another bar in the entire session. She went cross-legged into the corner of the gym and played on the phone. And that's why I knew you can't talk to women like you talk to men. It does not work.
And obviously, there is as much variation between women as there But there is variation between women and between men, and a good coach will get to know them all.
Correct.
And understand what it makes each individual tick. But looking at generalities and differences between groups is also very useful. Essential.
Yeah, if you want more women to play, you need to be taught. What I say about rugby, right, is that each club needs to give an offering to its local community that appeals to those people in that community. And, you know, sex-based rugby is exactly the same. You've got to make something which appeals to the people that you want to play the game. Otherwise, you're not going to have a game. And I don't know why that's controversial. Yeah. One of the few times World Rugby has been good and accurate on this.
I don't know how new this thing is. It's just, obviously, it's... Yeah, I don't know. So, but thank you to that person who brought it to my attention, because I just thought it was quite interesting.
That's a very interesting conversation.
But Squidge's reaction was, this is extraordinary.
Extraordinary. Yeah. Maybe it is. Maybe it is. Yeah, maybe.
Hey, I'm happy to be wrong. If you think we're wrong, contact airchasers@gmail.com. It's all good.
Mm-hmm.
So where are we at?
I think that's it. We've got some European Cup games that we've discussed them. I think we can go home. I think we're done.
I think we are done. What are you staying in Beth Gellert for much longer?
Here for a week, so through to next Friday.
Wow.
Well, the coming Friday. I guess we're on Monday already.
Mate, you've earned a bit of downtime as well with where you've been working.
Ah, bloody hell. I'm supposed to be off for a week. I've got a very important thing to do at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Are you actually still working? You're nuts.
I wasn't intending on working. I'll tell you about another time.
Right. So last week we got a lot of great feedback about our royal segments, which I think is just essential. I can't believe
there's morphing going on. Have you seen?
No.
I knew nothing about this whole Kate Middleton thing until about a week ago when Sonia McLaughlin made this something I took an interest in.
Well, actually, I was going to ask Phil something completely different, but no.
Oh, yeah, go on.
No, I was going to ask him if he's in favour of some very boring legislation which says you're not allowed to be contacted out of work hours.
Legislation?
But, yeah, so when Labour eventually... trash the Tories and they have less than 100 seats according to current polling. One of the bits of legislation they want to bring
best in, thing for the country would be zero seats.
I completely agree. I can't wait for them to get wiped out. It's going to be hilarious. Anyway, what was I saying? Legislation is they're going to ban companies.
Actually, I'll go back. And the best thing for the country would be they getting one seat in High Peak.
Yeah, one seat in High Peak. Yeah.
But anyway,
of course.
Continuing.
Yeah. So, banning companies contacting their employees out of work hours. I was wondering if Phil would actually enjoy that.
I just wouldn't stick to it. Because I can't.
And how would that work for
like, self-employed
and stuff?
Don't know. I
technically don't have any holiday is not something I have.
Well, Bidmore & Co. is a owner-managed limited company, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's three brothers who work in it, and then we've got multiple staff.
Bidmore to the power of four.
Three.
Three. Bidmore three cubed.
And, yeah, exactly right. Now, to me, that hands us a competitive advantage because we can work when, I don't know, other companies can't work. I mean, we wouldn't ask our staff to work, but we can work. And, so I don't really know how it is enforced.
You couldn't ask your staff to work, but but when it comes to promotions and stuff, it won't officially be taken. This is it, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, this exactly. Isn't it not a charter for the most motivated people? I mean, what if you want to work? What if you just want...
Like Phil wants to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning. He cannot wait.
I kind of see the point, right? I sort of support it because I see how much stress people get put under, particularly like in law. Law would be the one, or accountancy, any of the service-based professions. Some of the stress and deadlines is enormous, and mostly it's because they're under-resourced. So, I don't know.
Can you imagine that with like... Keir Starmer caught fining Exeter Chiefs because Henry Slade did a workout.
How would you enforce it in rugby? Like, what were you doing today? Working out? What are you doing? Work or a workout?
That's a competitive advantage. No, you can't. Rob Baxter, you cannot ask You cannot ask Richard Capstick to do deadlifts on his holiday.
I'd love to see what the legislation says, because to me it's a charter for the most motivated to get even further ahead, which is fine, I guess. But also, I do actually think there's a serious point, which you shouldn't be working outside of work hours. I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, Royals.
Yeah, what's been going on this last week, Phil, with the Royals? Anything?
You're the Royal correspondent, Tim.
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm going to swerve that one.
All I know is that no, let's not go there. Because I'll wait for Sonia McLaughlin to tell us what the latest is.
Fine.
Right, on that bombshell. Contact edchasers@gmail.com. Find JB on LinkedIn. And if you need any financial advice, go to him. If you need any extra content on YouTube, come to Egg Chasers Rugby. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And a lot of people very much enjoyed last week's Patreon special as well. We're doing a few Patreon podcasts, so you can keep the lights on. Support us there. patreon.com/eggchasers. Have a good holiday, Phil.
Cheers, boys.
What were we going to say, Jay?
No, crack on.
All right, cool. Let the boys in.
We do have some...
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.